Okay, cool. Good evening, Internet, or good morning, Internet, or how do you do, Internet?
How do you do?
And as we record this, it is Obama's last night.
It's true.
Dun, dun, dun.
As President of the United States.
I bet he doesn't give a shit.
He's got less than 24 hours.
If I was like a second term president, I would not give a flying fuck if like it was Kang and Kodos taking over the next, the next administration. You're like, I'm done. I'm out of here, bitches.
Yeah, but well, he was nothing before he was president. And he's very afraid that he'll go back to being nothing. That's why he's decided he's going to hang around in Washington. So he can be something still.
Do you think he'll join the UN?
Ooh,
that would be perfect for him.
You know what'd be funny is if he joins the UN and the US leaves it.
Oh yes.
Oh God, Alan, I hadn't really been thinking about that. Like that's always like my little closet, my little pocket fantasy. But I never expect anybody to actually do it. But I wonder if we would.
We might.
I wonder if we would specifically because he joins it.
Oh, that'd be awesome, wouldn't it?
He goes in the UN and go, cool, fine. You know what, Barry? You can stay there. We're leaving. And specifically, take that fucking statue of the Colt Python out in front of the UN building melt it down and make a whole bunch of fucking revolvers out of it.
That'd be nice.
Somebody, I don't know if the steel's like, good enough to...
Somebody like, oh, Colt should maybe buy that statue and melt it down and make pythons.
They shouldn't buy the statue because we're just going to take it.
Oh, okay.
we're going to take it as we turn the UN building into low income housing.
people would be going, oh man, I got to stay there.
Or maybe charter schools for underprivileged children. I mean, there's any number of things you could do with that space to put it better. I mean, just a parking deck. New York could probably stand to have a parking deck the size of the UN building.
It's already the world's largest whorehouse. I mean,
that's true.
Okay, so we have Hayden back with us tonight.
Hello, everyone.
And
by the way, have you guys heard from Jay?
No,
I've seen his posts on Facebook.
Okay, because I actually got an email from him just before the show started.
Apparently he likes you better than he likes us.
He wanted to let everybody know that he is currently sitting in a hot tub shaped like a champagne glass, loaded with naked prostitutes, and they're about to give him they're about to pee on his face while he wears an orange wig.
Yes, but is Mike Rowe there? Because that's all I care about. Has he met Mike Rowe?
Is Mike Rowe at SHOT Show?
I believe he was, yeah.
Yeah, he was going to be at SHOT Show, and he wrote a big thing about it.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
Somebody was complaining about his liking guns or something like that, and he was like, well, I'm going to be at SHOT Show, and you can come have dinner with me, and so, yeah.
You know, between Mike Rowe's chest hair and Jay's back hair,
I
worry for that hot tub's filter.
You know, there's a reason they tell you not to let your pet swim in the pool.
Oh, man. Well, a hot tub full of Las Vegas prostitutes would be like tit soup, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Yes, it would.
Tit soup.
Tit soup. I don't do hot tubs just because, no. Human soup. It's human soup. It's disgusting. Yeah. I can't. No. Yeah. And there's no chlorine typically in hot tubs, right?
No, actually all the hot tubs I've ever been to were like, I think have more chlorine than normal.
The public ones, do they? Yeah, the public ones usually have lots of chlorine.
Public ones do, but like private ones, I just know.
Frequently, a lot of people like the ones in their backyard and stuff, they a lot of times won't use chlorine, but
It gives me the heebie-jeebies. I'm sorry.
I don't know.
Nope.
I would assume that's because they're changing the water more often.
You would hope so.
Oh, no. Or maybe you need to be adding water more often. Ooh. In which case, it's not human soup. It's human bouillon.
Yuck.
Thankfully, I've never particularly...
Just wait, wait till it cooks down a little.
Yeah. Human bone broth.
Oh boy. Hey, we're off to a good one.
Yeah.
So, right before the, I started the recording, Weird had asked Hayden about tea and I said, wait, save it for the show.
No, it wasn't me.
Was it you?
We sound just alike, Weird.
That's right.
Maybe it was somebody asked Hayden if he still had a tea habit from.
That would be me, okay. The girl on the show, Alan.
Well, I get y'all confused.
Oh my God. Are you like sound blind? Like people are colorblind? You just can't distinguish?
I think that's been called damned with faint praise.
I think it's my miswired brain is.
Or maybe we've been doing this show for so long that he's got like married person ears to us.
That could be. All I hear is wah 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 wah.
Yeah, probably.
So do I still like tea? Well,
Well, no. Do you still have the British tea habit?
I do somewhat. Yes, I have a teapot. I don't really drink coffee that much, and in fact, almost never. I've never been never got the liked it
because it's disgusting.
I just don't like the taste.
Yeah, because it's disgusting.
It is pretty gross.
Yeah. Yeah.
And tea is a much nicer. It really is. And but the tea bags, unfortunately, you get in America are utter junk. Really,
they are hot dog shit.
This is true.
That is the only reason why I drink coffee is because I am a tea drinker and I am a pretty deep down and dirty caffeine addict. And so when I am on vacation or on the road, I am going to need to get my caffeine somehow. I'm not going to order tea at a restaurant because no. I mean, number one, it's the biggest fucking insult on earth. Cause first up, you order tea in a restaurant. They will come to you with a glass full of boiling water.
Or if you're lucky, it's boiling.
Yeah. A cup full of lukewarm to hot water and a tea bag. It is the equivalent to going to the Korean restaurant and you sit down at the little table and they just bring you platters of raw meat and you're like, I'm sorry, am I at a restaurant?
That's what they do at Korean restaurants though.
I know, but it's just stupid. Why do I have to fucking cook this shit? I put meat on the grill all the time or on a hot pan when I'm at home. Thank you very much. There's a reason why I came out to someplace else and sit down and I'm going to wait for you to bring me the check is because you're also going to cook the food for me. You're going to put it on my plate and I'm going to stuff it in my big fat dumb bed. And that's the story. And that's the same thing with tea is you order coffee. They will bring you a hot cup of coffee. And when your coffee gets low, they will pour more coffee into the cup. It is a great concept. When you order tea, they will bring you the material components for a cup of tea. And not only will you wait for them to bring you the tea, but then you have to wait for the material components to turn into tea.
Yeah. But doesn't tea have less of a shelf life than coffee might?
In other words, I would argue that tea has more of a shelf life.
Well, I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know. Well, I'm just wondering because, Given the fact that in the U.S. anyway, people drink a lot more coffee than they do tea. So if they made tea ahead of time, like they make coffee.
Oh, shelf life. You mean like
I will say, I have, when I bring my tea home from the store, it comes in various bags and tins and containers. I have these little glass canning jars that have the rubber gasket and the little lever right. action.
I'm talking about lid. Once it's made.
And so, and in those containers, like even when it's like 3/4 empty, that the tea does not really age inside of those. Well, if you left it open on the counter, it would age.
Yeah.
Now, well, coffee after it's made does not have a very long like pot life. Right. Let's call it a pot life, like after it's made.
Yeah, but people
People will drink it and it tastes like shit, but you shouldn't.
what, how, like, so let me go about my day. I got up first thing this morning. I put a pot on this. I put a 3-quart saucepan on the stove, dumped some, I think some Indian Red Label into it, let it come to a boil, turn it off, let it steep for probably more like an hour, cause chasing my toddler around. But you know, 10, 15 minutes to let it steep. And then I strain it into a little teapot that I have, and I will drink from the I will drink from that teapot all day long. I'll just pour.
Hayden is going to tell you did it wrong.
I'm sure I did by British standards, but let me tell you, I have perfected this method. It is the best tasting tea.
Hayden.
Hayden,
there's nothing wrong.
Hayden, you can disagree with him. It's okay.
Oh, you can. Oh, please disagree with him. Please tell me what I'm doing wrong, and tell me how I could have done it better.
Right. Well, you did the first part right, which is that where most Americans I've seen get wrong, and particularly in, you know, a cafe or a restaurant, like you say, they bring a cup and it's full of hot water. No, that's the problem. Is that tea needs to be made through water that's on a rolling, actually on a, what we call in England, a rolling boil, which is it's physically bubbling,
right.
Not brought to the boil and then turned off. So what you described with your pan, the one part where it gets done wrong in America, you actually got that right. I'm quite, you know, the part of steeping for 15 minutes, I see that a lot from the concept of iced tea, where they put these iced tea bags, which are utter garbage. But at the same time, it's an American tradition. I'm not going to. But it's it's not tea, please. You steep the tea for about 3 or 4 minutes. After that, it really starts. You're really not getting the benefit.
This is the best.
So actually, I would argue, Hayden, that I specifically use a little bit less. I use about a heaping tablespoon of tea for that whole 3-quart pan. So I actually use less tea, and so what I'm doing is I'm wringing all the life out of that tea. As opposed to, I feel the English dosage, you could actually technically run a second steeping through the tea, and it wouldn't be as good, but it would work.
Oh no!
Now, if you want to drink it throughout the day, I would invest. Then I don't think they're very expensive. A nice good thermos flask, you know, which is a vacuum.
I've got one of those.
Is Thermos a brand here? I think it is.
Yes.
And so make the tea. Now, you didn't say what type of tea. Now, obviously, Earl Grey tea is pretty much the same as the dishwater that, you know, after you've...
I like Earl Grey if it's good. Though, let me tell you, there's a wide gamut of Earl Grey out there.
And it's all really bad.
I can hear the disdain in Hayden's voice. It's fantastic. It's like weird talking about Budweiser or something.
I actually don't drink much Earl Grey, because the only way to get Earl Grey is to buy it from white people. Because the white people buy the tea from brown people, and then they add the oranges to it that make it taste like dishwater.
Yes. So I can.
It's extremely bitter for people who have not had it.
Right. Yes. It's horrible. I like Assam, which is an Indian tea. It's actually really quite strong. And if I want a cup of tea before I go to bed, I drink an African tea called a rooibos, which is really
good stuff. Yeah.
Yes. It's caffeine free, but it's got that it's still got a strong taste. Now, if and I'm addressing you, the listener, in my voice, that if the thing you've only ever had is iced tea, then the taste profile is going for a British cup of tea is completely different. They're not the same. But
Hayden, do you put something in your tea?
I put a little dash of milk.
Thank you. Me too. My husband is always like appalled because, like, I just don't understand milky tea. I don't understand it. Why do you put milk in?
I don't.
Because it's delicious.
I don't even like coffee, but I will just put like one packet of Splenda, specifically Splenda, because you pour the one packet in and it dissolves before it hits the bottom. If you pour sugar into coffee, the appropriate amount of sugar, it's some of it. The last sip is going to be cloyingly sweet. And the first sip is going to be more bitter than I like it.
But do you not own spoons?
I do, but why would I use them? That sounds like effort. Did I tell you the point where I've got the thing where I grab the different package and it tastes the same and there's no effort?
So let's
could also churn my own butter, but what's really cool is at the grocery store, they come in these things called sticks. It's awesome. And they've got little markings on the side of it. So 2 tablespoons of butter, I just take a knife and go whack.
Oh God.
So wait, let's back up.
Yes.
I am.
I want to know what the tea bags in England are like compared to the United States tea bags.
Do they even use tea bags?
Yeah.
Yes. Oh yes. Sometimes they're circular. There's a particular brand that is in a shape of a pyramid. So it's a triangle based pyramid.
I've actually had one of those, and that's actually some pretty content good tea in there. They actually don't put garbage in those.
No. So the idea is the circular tea bag is that the tea, the tea doesn't get trapped in the corner because there is no corner for it to get trapped in.
Right.
And how often are they paper and how often are they silk?
Oh, they're pretty much all paper. If you use, if you have loose leaf tea, which some people still do, you put it in a little sort of, tea caddy and then, you know, put that in your kettle pot. Now, as a general rule, and here's another thing where it goes wrong in America. You take your teapot, which, you know, can have a British Bulldog or the Union Jack, or, you know, if you bought it from a comedy one, it's some sort of, you know, fat bottom girl with a knickers round a corner picture on the side. And how many tea bags? This is a rule. It's one for each person, and one for the pot.
Right.
I'm confused.
No.
Okay.
I learned all this stuff too because my parents were Irish.
We have the
Irish people have the tea thing too, same as the English people. We have the tea thing.
Okay. So
and you warm up the teapot before you put the tea water in. You warm up the pot so that before, you know, you put hot water in the pot before you make the tea, so that the teapot is warm, so that when you pour the boiling water in, it doesn't, like, the temperature of the water doesn't immediately fall because the pot is cold. Anyway, but yeah,
the same reason why I pack my martini glass with crushed ice.
Exactly, but in reverse. Exactly. Yeah. I remember my grandmother stayed with us. My grandmother lived in Ireland, and she moved back to Ireland after, like, my mom had grown up and gotten married and whatever. She moved back to Ireland, and she would come over and she would stay with us for a couple months at a time. And I remember I was in middle school, and she was kind of like, you know, she couldn't get around that well because she had broken her hip or, you know, whatever. And she wanted me to make her a cup of tea. And I remember I was just sick of taking care of grandma. So I was like, I'm going to make her a cup of tea in the microwave.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. No. That was the worst. So there's a specific, you know, it's very specific. I mean, and she could tell that I had not made it properly just by tasting it, of course.
It's boiling water. The microwave does not affect the boiling water.
Oh, apparently it does. Yeah.
It's not a rolling boil.
Right, I don't know, but it just wasn't right.
Water never gets above boiling temperature.
I don't don't know. Can't explain it.
It is impossible for water to get above 220 degrees Fahrenheit. It's impossible. Cannot happen.
Right.
Though, to be fair, the heat gradient within the within the cup might be a little bit different as well, because if you boil it on the stove, it's going to be hot at the bottom and relatively cool at the top, but quickly circulated by the rising bubbles. Microwave is going to attack from all angles.
Yeah. I don't know. When I make myself a cup of tea, if it's cold in my kitchen, I will always fill my cup with hot water from this tap before I put the boiling water in.
So tell me what I'm doing wrong. When I make a cup of tea, I get my teacup, I fill up my kettle with water, and I put it on the stove. I turn on the gas, and I let it go till it whistles, and then I put the tea bag in the cup. And
what kind of tea bag?
Whatever kind I have.
What kind do you have?
I have all kinds.
This is important.
I have all kinds. I'm a tea slut. I like it all.
Okay. Okay. So look, as long as you are a tea slut, as long as it's not like the last, it is not those little paper envelopes of Lipton.
That was
another time Lipton, when I used to drink a lot of coffee when I was out to sea.
Lipton is only for iced tea.
I'd pull open a drawer and I'd see a case of Lipton tea bags that had the paper sachets.
That's for iced tea.
With the foil pulled back. And with the cellophane pulled back, and it's probably been there for at least a couple of years. Ugh. And you might as well just soak sawdust in water at that
Actually,
point.
Actually, the last tea I made was sleepy time tea.
Ooh, that is good, but it is with
the stuff in it that makes you actually fall asleep. I forget what they call it.
Echinacea.
Echinacea, whatever it is.
I really think just the warm chamomile tea will do just as much.
I don't know. I can tell the difference. You know, I drink a cup of that, and 30 minutes later, I'm snoozing.
Alan, let me tell you a different sleepy time tea. See, when it is after 6 o'clock and I no longer drink tea, there's this magical stuff. It comes from where Hayden is from. It's called gin. And let me tell you, so, that sleepy time shit happens way faster.
So, here I go. I've got my cup, and I've got my tea bag in the cup. I've got my whistling tea. It's not a teapot. It's a hot water kettle. It's a kettle.
Just say
kettle. It's a kettle.
I've always heard it called a tea kettle, but I don't know that that's appropriate.
That's because we're Americans. Americans do call them tea kettles.
Yeah. And so I pour it in the cup, and I let it sit there for, I don't know, it's 7 minutes or whatever it is. And then I dredge the tea bag out, and I dump in a little milk and maybe sometimes some sugar, depending on what kind of tea it is. And that's it.
Well, I think 7 minutes is that's a long steep. You're going to.
I like it
three
strong.
Or 4 minutes. Well, yes, I'm okay then. 3 or 4 minutes.
Oh God, Hayden, you've earned your keep on this show already.
Hayden, I wanted to ask: in the United States, what brand of tea do you buy? I mean, do you buy particularly in Assam?
I do, but I bring it from England. I just bring it.
But
enough.
If you go to the grocery store, what would you buy?
He's telling you he doesn't.
He doesn't.
I would go to a supermarket that sells tea from England.
Fancy tea.
Hayden.
Okay. Again. No, I get that.
Supermarket
that
sells tea from England is, again, breaking the cardinal rule of buying tea from white people. If you go to a grocery store run by somebody who is a nice shade of brown, possibly with a red dot in the middle of their forehead, they will have something called Red Label. And that shit is fan-fucking-tastic and unbelievably cheap.
They also keep it next to the Asphalt 2020.
None of the Indian markets I go to have liquor licenses.
Red Label.
Red Label is I did not buy it for the longest time.
It's the same company that makes PG Tips. Okay.
Yeah. I always just didn't want to buy it because I'm like, oh man, that's what all the Indian housewives drink. I don't really want to deal with that. And finally I just went, fine, I'll give it a try. I think it was a friend of mine's mother made a pot for me. And I went, oh my God, this stuff is good. That is a very good. I believe it's an Assam blend. I don't think it's pure Assam, but it's mostly Assam.
Tea has a culture in England that I don't necessarily see as much in America. Is that, you know, if a friend comes and, you know, knocks on your door and you sort of say, "How's your day been?" and they will say, "Oh, I've had a terrible day," and, you know,
come in for a cup of tea.
Come in for a cup of tea, and the actions of, well, what tea would you like, and boiling the kettle, which obviously takes a couple of minutes, allows conversation to begin. You know, it's a little bit, you know, small talk, obviously, but at the same time, and then, you know, the 10 minutes or the 20 minutes of drinking the cup of tea, which adds up to about half an hour, you allow the person to, you know, tell their story of why their day was, you know, so bad. What I have in England as a culture, and I don't see it here necessarily as much as in America, is that as my friends walk past my house, they'll knock on my door and say hello. And I'll typically invite them in, and they'll say, "Oh no, I need to get to the shops before they close." But you don't. That's a culture thing that I don't necessarily see. I've been to Americans' houses that have children, and I'll see the parents drive up to the bottom of the driveway and let the children out, because the children are playing together with the other children in the house, but will not come into the house. Will, you know, wave the children goodbye and stay in the car, and not actually come to the door. And they obviously get offered a cup of tea, which is I just don't see that sort of level of interaction. Well, maybe that's an Ohio thing.
Speaking from more than likely my parents' standpoint, as well as speaking for myself moving forward as my daughter becomes more social, is you drop them off at the end of the driveway because your child is going to see their friends. You're not going to see your friends. You don't necessarily have a relationship at all with their parents. You've met them before. You know what they're like. You don't need to say hi.
But it's interestingly the opposite in England. Not that you have a relationship with the parents of the child, and isn't in terms of a friendship. You don't. All you're doing is having a cup of tea, and you're just having a cup of tea.
So there's the big problem right there, Hayden. Yes. Is if in fact the parents of my daughter's friend would make me a cup of tea, then I would fucking come in.
Yeah.
All they've got to do is offer me coffee or Budweiser, and no thank you. Not even Budweiser, Bud Light.
What are they?
There is a cultural thing, though. There is a cultural thing. I don't know why. I don't know. People don't really talk to their neighbors here either, you know. I don't know.
No.
I don't talk to anyone.
Did I not in there? Because I found nobody ever talked to me when I was renting. But the moment I bought my house, suddenly I knew everybody on the block.
Well, that's because you cared. When you're renting, it's like, meh, it's not my house.
Well,
who cares?
Well, but it's also nobody also will befriend the person that rents because – yeah, in 2 years they're going to be gone.
Right.
Why build up a relationship with someone who's going to disappear?
I just learned today that my mother is in a group with a woman who lives like across a street and three houses down from me. And my mom found out that this woman lives on the same street as I do, and she was like, "Oh, my daughter lives on that street," and blah blah blah, and. You know, my mom's like pretty good friends with this woman now because of her groups. And the lady said to her today, she's like, you know, I never see your daughter out. I never see your daughter. And I said to my mom, I said, did you tell her this because I'm completely asocial and I don't hang out like around the neighborhood with people?
It's because she hates people. She's a librarian.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think that in the United States, we're more kind of a backyard culture. Like you hang out in your own backyard. And
do people
really
not have front porches in your area?
No, we have them. Sure, we do. But it's not like you, I don't know. Maybe it's just me. But I don't see people interacting really a whole lot, like on the street with each other.
Well, we also have other things to do.
Right. Well, there's that. And also, you know, there might be that problem that one time that guy who tried to steal the wood out of my front lawn at night.
That's right. Your neighbor's a jerk. And if you spend any time with him, you're going to get into a fight.
Yeah. But
there's also that,
to be fair, I'm actually not close friends with anybody who's in my, I know everybody who's in my neighborhood, but I'm not really, I always keep everyone who lives in my neighborhood kind of at arm's length. Like I'm very friendly with us both, especially both my neighbors on either side. And we've got, you know, a very, very good relationship, but we're not friends.
Well, you didn't move in to make friends. You moved in to
and
house.
I think part of the problem
while one of my neighbors probably if I really wanted to go down that road, maybe we could become really good friends. Another one of my neighbors is a wonderful guy and I like him a lot, but if we started hanging out socially, I would get so fucking sick of his nonsense.
Yeah.
And guess what? When I get sick of his nonsense, he still lives right next door.
Yeah.
Okay. It's kind of like have you ever heard of the stories of like the people that like started sleeping with a girl that lives down the hall in their apartment building? And that's then, never a good situation.
And then they break up and then yeah.
And then they break up and yeah. All of a sudden now when you're like you're going out to get groceries, you might walk past your ex in the hall.
I think I think the problem is that it's more than just that social interaction because I think it's because British people have this reputation in the U.S. for being incredibly polite. Like we consider it crazy polite, like
polite to a fault.
Yes, like insanely polite. And I think that's a lot that has a lot to do with it because you might. You might be having tea with a neighbor in a situation where in the U.S. we'd go like, ah, fuck that guy. Who cares?
I hate that guy.
Yeah, we're just not a polite people. We're not.
But that's true. You're very friendly people.
Well, we can be. But I don't think as a nation we lack that British politeness I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm just saying I think that's the big cultural difference. I think that's why we don't we don't do that.
I would argue on the film view, I've always admired Toshirô Mifune's part in Kurosawa's films. Where he's always the rogue samurai, and he's always like breaking all the social norms, and he just doesn't give a shit. But in Japanese culture, also is very polite, so it's kind of scandalous. But meanwhile, he's always the good guy. He never plays a villain, and so he's always the good guy. He's always the guy that you want on your side, but he just doesn't give a shit. And that's kind of an Americanism, if you will.
Yeah, it's kind of the.
Well, in my career, I've been very lucky. I got to live and work in Japan, in Tokyo, for 5 years and learn the culture and learn the language. It was part of my job. It was not the armed forces. It was, you know, an actual job. And if you think about it, there's a lot of similarities between the British culture and the Japanese culture. And there's a lot of similarities in our technologies, particularly, you know, when we were building castles, the Japanese were building, they call them Joes. So they were building their own castles, and you know, we were building our, you know, broadsword sort of technology, and they were, you know, doing the samurai. Now, if you think about it, England is an island separate from its continent. Japan is an island separate from its continent. An island nation tends to be very protective. It also tends to be very warlike.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that our politeness level, as you say in England, is very similar to the Japanese politeness level does not give me any surprise whatsoever.
Huh.
That's a distinction I had never made.
Yeah, that's interesting. Hmm.
And they both drink a lot of tea.
That's true.
Both drink a lot of tea, yes. And they both have a, and they both give a lot of ceremony to the act of drinking tea.
This is true.
And they also. And they both stole the tea from another culture. that they at once occupied.
Yes.
Hmm.
Hmm.
It is remarkably similar.
Huh. But it's okay. They gave it back.
I'm trying to think of why the politeness.
It could be just the warlike nature.
Yeah, and I keep on thinking of the whole be polite, plan to kill everybody you meet, mm-hmm. kind of thing.
Well, there's a lot of just general etiquette is brought on very, very hostile grounds, be it like the clinking of glasses was done as a means of your mixing.
Shaking hands,
presenting your right hand. The military salute was raising the visor of your helmet, which was both saying, I'm exposing my face to you so that you can see who I am, and so therefore I'm showing you some respect. But it's also, I'm raising the visor of my fucking helmet. If you want to shoot an arrow at me, you can kill me right now. There's a lot of, you know, very, very, like, almost sinister things that go on for what we consider etiquette. And so... Sure. It could be that, yeah, when you are a very warlike people, that, you know, versus Americans really aren't particular. I mean, people always talk about Americans being a warlike people, but we're really just more just we're scrappy, but we're not warlike. I mean, we got this modern like world police bullshit that's going on right now, but that's a very, very recent development. But more, we're really just we are the timber rattlesnake on the Gadsden flag. I mean, the whole point of that was the timber rattlesnake is a very, very peaceful, very, very shy creature. But the moment you try to tread on it, the moment you fuck with a timber rattlesnake, it'll kill your ass dead. And I've always been, you know, just deeply enamored with that analogy.
Huh. See, you learn, this is the educational part of the show.
Yeah. Interesting take.
I mean, my thoughts on why we're so, you know, the British culture and the Japanese culture is polite is because we have to trade with our neighbors. It's the only way we can survive, you know,
that's true.
Economically. So whilst we're warlike, in the sense of an island, you have to defend it because people have always looked to the island to go, well, let's have that piece of land over there as well. As a nation of islanders, we have to trade with our continent. So we have to be polite. And
I just realized the significance of the fact that like England's closest ally, you know, closest ally is France. And you've got stuff like the whole Normandy history and the Hundred Years' War and all that. But yet, you're still trade partners, and the politeness definitely seems to take a very, very important key thing when you think about the fact that, oh yeah, we actually have to exchange goods and services with these motherfuckers.
Yeah, England and France have been at odds for
ever
since. Yeah, basically forever
since it was Saxon and Gaul.
Yes, yeah, way before then,
or Celtica and Gaul.
Yeah, funny. Yeah, I was watching, I don't know if y'all watched the show on, is it, what channel is it on? The Vikings? Mm-hmm. Have you watched that? Weird? Hayden?
No,
anybody?
I haven't. No, ah, no.
I think I've seen bits and pieces of it, but yes.
I have.
It's great. It's actually really good, and it follows the, basically the father and brother and children of this particular Viking character. And it was something I learned from TV that I didn't know, is that the Normans who invaded England under, you know, William the Conqueror were actually descendants of Vikings who invaded France.
I actually didn't know that.
It was amazing. I was like, wow. It was really
and
cool.
Once again, my earworm is back. Damn it.
What?
Rule Britannia. Like, for weeks now, it's been the worst earworm.
Especially for a good Irish girl.
Never, never, never shall be slave.
So annoying. So, anyway.
Yeah.
Tonight.
What?
Or rather, tomorrow, our long national nightmare will come to an end.
Yes, it will.
I wouldn't even call it a national nightmare. No, I'd really kind of call it that, like, that shitty relationship with that girl that we should have broken up with, like, long ago.
Yeah, I was going to make that point that, you know, I remember very distinctly the dread and fear and woe about Barack Obama getting elected, and oh my god, we're gonna like have to bury our guns in the backyard and it's gonna be awful. And you know, the only thing really for me is that my healthcare deductible sucks, and I still can't find a brick of 22. Like, that's about it. Everything else is pretty okay. And I want to tell every liberal that's freaking out right now, it's gonna be okay, because you know what? It's not about the government. It's about us.
Yep.
It's us. I'm okay. You're okay. I see it every day at the library. I see like a whole diverse group of people at the library every day. And I want to say to them, we're okay. It's going to be okay.
I'll go a step further, Brita, and say I'm not going to give any of that fucking advice to them, because as someone who has forcibly left the Republican Party.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of problems with the Republican Party. I know for a fact I'm going to have a lot of problems with Donald Trump. There's no way that's not going to happen. And yet at the same time, of all of my struggles with political representation and all that, I've never once ever went, you know what? Those Democrats offer a decent alternative.
No.
Nope, they've always, oh, wow, Trump is really, really bad, and the Democrat running against him is so much worse.
Right.
Like, wow, you managed to find somebody worse, and you put them there. What? That is amazing. So, yeah, like, I'm one thing I must say with all of this thing is I am taking utter glee at watching the Democrats after this brutal fucking defeat. And I'm, you know, I must say, like, I mean, the 4 years ago the Republicans got the shit kicked out of them with running Mitt Romney against Barack Obama. It was
right, you know, and
very,
that was,
very, very similar to John Kerry going against George W. Bush. That was a race for the incumbent to lose. They were really doing a shitty job. They had no popularity. They had no leg to stand on. And the other side went, guess what I can do? I can run somebody even worse. And the Republicans absolutely did that, is the feel how you will about Donald Trump. The Republican, you know, the Republican field was very diverse and very active throughout the entire primary. And, you know, I'm not happy with the result, though. Maybe I'll be laughing about how wrong I was in 4 years or 8 years, but I still wish there was a couple of other people on that dais that I wish could have won the nomination and possibly the presidency. But there was at least a lot of different stuff. The Democrats had Bernie Sanders kind of popped out of nowhere. I think that was kind of an accident as far as the party was concerned, because they did everything they could to stomp him into the dirt. And, they just kept charging forward, more of the same. Kind of doing the Republican Party, it's his turn sort of game. With the, nope, now it's Hillary's turn. And so now you've got, like, I remember seeing, it was actually the Savage Lovecast podcast. He had somebody on who wrote this book that was essentially trying to get the Democrat opposition to Donald Trump to mobilize, like, the Tea Party to help essentially hamstring Trump as president and keep him from undoing all that stuff. And I just could not stop laughing, because first up, as somebody who, I mean, I'm not a strident Tea Party supporter, but at least it's a break in the status quo. I'll say right now, the Tea Party has been nothing but a disappointment. It's gotten some juices flowing. It's got some stuff moving, but it hasn't actually produced much in the way of results anywhere, really. I mean, there's a couple of local area elections in certain places that have gotten, you know, the Tea Party persons come through and knocked out some more establishment Republican candidate. But overall, the Tea Party's kind of just a phenomenon, but not a major.
Yeah, I think the Tea Party's dead.
I don't know if it's dead.
It was, like, co-opted by the Republican establishment.
Yeah, I mean, there's. I mean,
they proceeded to take apart Ted Cruz.
Yeah, it's dead.
So, you know, Ted Cruz was our big, for the Tea Party people. Ted Cruz was kind of like, well, we've got this guy and we can maybe run with this guy, and he sounds like he's on our side, and they proceeded to take him apart. Ted Cruz would have been great, you know, he would have been great, but he wasn't a Republican Party player, and so he had to go.
And he wasn't powerful enough and had enough money like Trump did to withstand the Republicans hated Trump as much as they hated Cruz, but Trump had tons of money and public exposure, and plus Trump had the Democrats rooting for him. You got to remember, during the entire Republican primary, man, the Democrats were pounding it for Trump. The media, Trump, 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 all the damn time, because they thought that they could get the Republicans to elect that buffoon, and then Hillary would beat him.
Yep.
Yeah. And here we are.
But I love the fact that this guy's talking about, like, oh, the Tea Party hamstrung Barack Obama, and so therefore, if we make ourselves more Tea Party like, we can hamstring Trump. Except Barack Obama didn't do anything. That's the reason why he wasn't successful, is because he wasn't interested in that. He was interested in eating at the fancy places and having the latest rock star come to his house to perform.
Well, he also, you know, we've said this before. He's this guy who basically had everything handed to him his entire life.
Oh yeah.
So he didn't actually have to do anything.
the editor of the Harvard Law Review, having never written a single article for the Harvard Law Review.
Right. And yeah. So he's handed the presidency, and he fulfilled the presidency the same way he did everything else in his life. He waited. Yep. Everybody else did something.
And he made everybody else feel better because they checked a box.
Right. Yeah. We elected the black guy. President. Yep. I mean, okay. That's today, done.
People are still waving around of the pointing out the fact that Barack Obama is our first black president.
Yep. And there won't be another one for 100 years, thanks to him.
Well, there won't be another Democrat one for 100 years.
Right. No,
there might be a Republican.
Exactly.
If a good solid Republican or whatever party, if the Republican Party blows up, I'm not gonna say that they're immune from what's happened to the Democrat Party either. But if somebody comes up from the Republican side or from whatever the conservative / actually liberty minded side of the field comes up and happens to be African American, happens to be gay, happens to be a woman, that side of the field,
or all three,
shit,
boom,
we don't
oh my God,
we don't fucking care. I mean, it's solid meritocracy shit. The idea that somebody is a something is completely irrelevant.
I think what's going to happen is the first Republican, the first black Republican president will be Milo Yiannopoulos' husband, and he'll be the first lady.
Oh my God.
Oh, Milo Yiannopoulos is the first lady.
I would vote for that. I love that guy. Oh, and speaking of first ladies, I would like to congratulate Michelle Obama for finally escaping her White House prison.
Oh yes.
Oh,
I Jesus. Remember. I gotta look it up. She came out and said in 2013 that living in the White House was like a prison. She says it's a nice prison, but it's still a prison. And so congratulations, Michelle Obama. You have finally escaped your plush $95 million worth of vacations and personal chef and et cetera, prison.
Also
because I keep seeing articles of, oh, Michelle Obama is saying goodbye to the White House. And she's taking her last walk through the White House with her dogs. And blah, blah, blah. Michelle Obama, best first lady ever. You know what? Fuck you, lady. You had your $100 million worth of fucking vacations on our dime.
Yeah, that's what I'm about to say is even like Scandinavia, where, holy shit, they treat prisoners like show dogs in those fucking countries. Yeah. I mean, have you seen the dipshit that shot up that island in Norway?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Have you seen his quote unquote cell?
Yeah. It looks.
Michelle Obama is.
I've stayed in worse hotel rooms.
Yeah, my college dorm room that I lived in for two of my 4 years of college was infinitely worse than that than that thing.
And you paid for it.
Even then. They don't fucking fly them all around the world for exotic vacations.
Right.
Also, did you notice that the house the Obamas are moving into in Washington, what's the first thing they did?
Build a wall
around it.
Racists.
Because.
Oh, wait, they are racists.
Yeah, they are.
They're in a white neighborhood.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to.
Yeah. They want to keep the Peckerwoods out.
Do you think that Michelle Obama will divorce him now that she's sort of completed her role?
No,
he still needs his beard.
Yeah,
yeah, and he's still at this point in time. Barack Obama, at least in the progressive world, he's ending on a high note. So he's going to be able to do exactly what Bill Clinton has done for the last decade.
Oh yeah, he'll give speeches and make money.
Give speeches for like $1 million a whack.
Yeah.
Oh no. Michelle Obama wants to stick around for that.
And he'll be on CNN or MSNBC every damn night bitching about whatever Trump's doing.
Yep.
He's not going to be one of these go off quietly into the night kind of presidents.
Nope.
I want to take a bet.
Ooh, I'm listening.
Well, we will never know. But how soon will Reggie Love show up at the new house?
He's already there. Are you kidding me?
Just saying.
Is he the dude that smoked crack with Obama in Ohio? Or in Chicago?
He was Obama's body man.
Oh.
In the White House.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
The one he played basketball with and was with him all the time. And his work wife.
Yes.
Yeah.
Comfortable silence.
Just speculating.
Just speculating. I don't think I have to wait very long.
Let us speculate. Now, what do we think tomorrow? How tomorrow's gonna go down?
Oh.
I'd like to go last because I heard some interesting information that I think will sound best after all of you have said your piece.
Well, I'll go first. Given that the there's been a whole bunch of people that have been practicing disruption activities, and the fact that the Washington D.C. police have mobile processing, you know, centers set up already, it's going to be a zoo. It's going to be a complete damn zoo. And then on top of it all, CNN runs this thing about. That's basically their version of, will no one rid me of this troublesome priest? You know, they're like, you know, if, you know, something happened and, you know, Trump got assassinated, you know, at the inauguration, then an Obama appointee would be president, you know, just throwing that out there, you know, just saying.
Yeah.
They've already arrested somebody for threatening to kill the president, who was some big Hillary supporter. You know, it's going to be a zoo. I think it's just going to be a complete zoo. I think the inauguration will go off. I think that's going to happen just because they're going to have, you know, an iron wall of security around that thing. But the rest of D.C. will be a complete zoo. If I worked in D.C., I think I'd stay home because it's going to be a complete disaster. That's my prediction.
I think that's a pretty good prediction. Brita?
Well, I think it'll be fine. I don't know. I've gotten so kind of jaded to all of the leftist pants shitting hysteria that's been happening. I'm like, yeah, okay. It's like dealing with children who are having temper tantrums. Like, you have to just kind of wait them out and let them kind of sputter out their rage and you know, you kind of walk away and ignore them and they're going to do their thing and then it'll be over. And I think the inauguration will be fine, and I think the liberals will all have their panties in a wad and they'll probably be crying again like they did after the election. And you know, it's just whatever. And I think that time will pass and things will be fine. I think the world just spins on and I don't think anything bad is going to happen, really. I mean, people have been like, oh God, the Trump presidency, you know, oh, what trouble is he going to get us into and what's going to happen? And I just look back and I'm like, we're still here. We're still fine. It's going to be okay. You know, I mean, we lived through 9/11 and that was like really, really the worst, you know, and sure, we had the Patriot Act after that and all the, you know, people are so divided now kind of ideologically, but we're all still pretty okay. And that's all I care about, really. You know, the grand scheme is not, that's not my life, really. I can look at it, but it's not me. It's not my life. It's not really anybody else's. We just go to day to day and do our thing, and we're all going to be okay.
Hayden, do you have anything?
I don't think too much is going to happen. And the reason why is because I think it actually takes a level of effort, and they'll actually need to have the minerals to do it.
I love that saying. I wish we had that here.
The stones.
We said the stones.
Yeah.
I love the stones.
I was
actually going to predict, of course, it's, you know, Trump's going to be inaugurated. It's not like he'll be assassinated or the Capitol will have to be evacuated because of some sort of terrorist attack or some other nonsense like that. But I did see that the one thing that angry Democrats are really good at doing is just being a complete fucking pain in the ass.
Sure.
Of the, would there be every 5 seconds when someone's trying to give the oath of office, somebody running up on stage with soy bomb painted on their chest?
Well, like children, right?
Exactly.
Children.
And but then I heard on the news, actually, just as I was driving home tonight, that they've given there's a reprieve from the security in the fact that people will be able to bring small umbrellas to the inauguration because it's set to rain. And I went, oh, there's not going to be any problem, because no matter how angry and how awful that this, you know, this Adolf Hitler rising in there, it's not worth getting their hair wet.
That's true. If it's going to rain, then yeah.
The Hitler of our time that will lead horrible extinctions and will round up people and mass deportations of anybody who's got a Hispanic last name or a Chinese last name, whether they've been here for 14 generations or not. You know, Keanu Reeves. Yeah, he's Asian enough. Send him to China. Hitler had time, but it's going to rain. I'm going to stay home and smoke weed.
Yeah, pretty much. But you know what? The day after, this is what everybody has to worry about. The Women's March is on January 21st. Everybody's going to be wearing their pussy hats.
Oh.
It's going to be... It's.
What's a pussy hat?
I guess for months, women involved in this march have been knitting pink pussy hats. And I guess, like, from...
You mean, like, anatomically correct? Or, like, does it have the word...
No. I think from... If you view the march from above, it's going to look like a bunch of women with, like, vulvas on their heads.
Well, that's about the dumbest thing I've heard.
That is a good way to get your group taken perfectly seriously.
Right.
Like a stony word.
So be warned, Washington. Those women are coming.
Well, wasn't there all kinds of flack with that too? Like they were like, oh, okay, all women show up, and then they were like, no, wait, not those women. And not those women over there, and no, not those women over there. And then the black women were like, oh no, not the white women. And the white, you know, it was just, it's
devolved. And the short answer is, whenever progressives say they're going to have some major protest, it never is.
No.
It never is. The Million Mom March. Hiccup.
I'm actually looking forward to the Women's March more than the inauguration.
Yeah.
Because it's just for the comedic value alone.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? Actually, here's another interesting thing. I hope, and hopefully since we've got, you know, groups like, you know, Breitbart and Newsmax and those other, you know, conservative and bloggers and all that, I hope somebody takes photographs after the inauguration is done. Because do we all remember, especially the 2006 2008 inauguration, or it was 2009 inauguration. Do you remember how fucking trash DC was?
It was a disaster.
Yeah.
It looked like somebody upended garbage trucks all over the city.
Cause I mean, that's the big thing. I remember talking to, it was actually right after the election, talking to a coworker of mine who's actually fairly left-leaning, but in an independent way. So he sees things from the different side of the woods, but he's hardly, oh God, Hillary, Hillary's going to win. Like, I don't know. He probably voted for Hillary just because he didn't like Trump, but but he's not. He's. I mean, there's so many people even to this day that won't admit that Hillary was a terrible candidate. But I was mentioning about the, you know, all the riots and the. I mean, it was, you know, there were cities on fire after, you know, after Hillary lost. And just pointing out the fact that that's a major problem. And he kind of said, eh, I mean, you know, it kind of is just, you know, if Trump had lost, there'd be a similar thing. And I said, no. Now, I see what you're saying, because you're correct. The, you know, level of butthurt and stupidity is bipartisan. But when it comes to the, you know, the left versus right, specifically, you have a older, you know, older and more established crowd that was supporting Trump. The people who were supporting, the people that were supporting Bernie, oh my goodness, like, I've just been noticing, like, when I see a car parked in a driveway around here that has Bernie Sanders sticker, and I live in Massachusetts, so there's a lot of them. It is always the, like, most broke dick rundown fucking apartment building, like, in town, like one of those places of the geez, like, even like 18-year-old me is like, oh, I'm glad I don't live in that dump. And I live.
My husband Mike had a guy at his work who during the primaries was voting for Bernie.
And they Wait, he worked with Mike, or he was
he was
begging Mike for change outside where he got coffee.
He worked with Mike. He still works there with Mike at an engineering firm. And he's like a young, you know, just out of college kind of guy. Oh. And he was like, I want like the free stuff. I want to get the free stuff. And he was kind of, you know, thinking, I want to get on the free stuff train. And everybody in the engineering firm, all the guys, and it's all white men that work there, were telling this guy, his name is, I'll call him Joe because his name is Joe, but they were trying to say, Joe, you don't understand. You are the source of the free stuff.
That's right. You got a job
for
now.
Other people. You have a job, and you're like a white guy with a job. You know, paying taxes. You are the source of the free stuff. You don't get free stuff.
Of course not.
You are the source of free stuff. Yeah, Bernie Sanders.
Bet that was shocking to him.
Well, I think he changed his bumper sticker. He then changed his bumper sticker to Sweet Meteor of Death.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, Bernie.
2016.
Bernie Sanders, yeah. Sweet Meteor Death. Not a whole lot of difference. So.
No, you know.
But as I was saying, there's definitely kind of a different mind. I mean, again, you have that. That's absolutely a big thing. Was like, I remember my father saying, "Oh, you know, Bernie Sanders. He seems like he would be of all the people out there. He absolutely seems like the guy that the nice guy to be around, so to speak." Well, I mean, Steven Crowder made a great point of pointing out the fact that he actually found somebody at a Bernie Sanders town hall in Vermont. Actually kind of ambushed him, and this guy was a small business owner and was like, you're going to drive me out of business with your policies. And Bernie didn't turn overtly nasty, but he was pretty nasty. And I said to my father, I said, communism, socialism, whatever you want to call whatever Marxist, you know, socialist form is always rooted in hatred. I mean, like, you read the Communist Manifesto, and it is at the very, very surface of a super duper altruistic plan to live in world harmony. But you just read into it just scratch the surface, and you realize, oh, no. It is a seething hatred of how we can kill those motherfucking rich people that are doing better than me. And when you read the biography of Karl Marx, Karl Marx was a fucking penniless loser his entire fucking life.
Just like Bernie. Yep.
And all that. And just people like Bernie, he sees. Like, Bernie was, what, 41 years old before he even had, like, a decent job? Like, he was living in those – I see a Bernie Sanders sticker, and it's in a shithole apartment that 18-year-old me wouldn't want to live into. you know, live in. And, you know, say, you know, declaring that, you know, me as a, you know, me as a teenager or, you know, young adult, I was pretty indiscriminate on where I'd lay my head, which is absolutely true. And now, you know, now that I'm pushing 40, oh my God, like, oh no. It needs to be a very nice place for me to lay my head because yeah, I don't tolerate that shit. Yet Bernie Sanders was living in fucking dumpy apartments and couch surfing like in his 40s. Holy shit. I mean, can you imagine the level of hatred you got through when somebody that's like half your age is doing better than you? And not for any reason that you can, that certainly Bernie could easily discern, because Bernie can't tell if somebody's got talent or not.
Very similar to Mike's experience today. Some people were in a sort of little sort of kitchenette area that we have in my work, and they were sat to sort of around a communal table, and they were saying, you know, how terrible it's going to be, Trump, it's going to be an awful presidency, they're really scared, they're really fearful and all sorts. And just like that sort of the scene from the movie Napoleon Dynamite, where you break the wrist and walk away, I sort of clearing my knife and fork and away, I said that I sort of leant over to him, and in a sort of stage whisper, I said, "Well, you got to realize that Obama legalized assassinating anyone. He legalized the NSA mass spying. He legalized prosecuting publishers, and he legalized CIA drones absolutely everywhere." And all of those now belong to Trump tomorrow.
Oh, no.
You are a sicker fuck than I initially thought, Hayden.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, the liberals, they were so sure they were going to be in charge forever. They weaponized the government even more than it was already. And now they're like, oh, shit, now what? You know, he's going to do to us what we were going to do to y'all. Oh, no. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that comes back to the old, you know, a government powerful enough to do what you want is powerful enough to do what you don't want in somebody else's hands. So, you know, these people that want more and more and more government always assume it's going to be them in charge. And it very rarely is, you know, even if they got their fondest wish, even if they, you know, even if they got to overthrow the Constitution and got to, you know, create a workers' paradise in the U.S. or whatever. You know, they don't stop and think that they're going to be the first ones against the wall, because that's what always happens in a socialist revolution. The first thing they do is eat their own.
And that's with their side in charge.
Right.
Let alone the fact that when suddenly the other side suddenly can make a move.
Yeah.
Well, and they want a nanny state because they all believe they'll get to be the nannies.
Right. Yeah, they don't realize that that's not the way it happens historically. You know, I mean, look at every Marxist revolution that's ever happened, and the people that were the supporters are the ones that wind up, you know, if they're lucky, penniless in a gulag.
Yeah. Well, they either want to be the nannies, or they want to be, you know, the child coddled at the teat of a loving mother.
Right.
I mean, I mean, there's one super ultra lefty insane blogger that I read because I enjoy such things. And one thing she said was, with the whole talk of the, you know, repeal of Obamacare, is the, I don't want more choices. I don't want, you know, a free market solution. I want to just have healthcare. I just want healthcare handed to me. I don't want to have to shop around and find the right healthcare for me. I don't want to have the risk of, you know, choosing the wrong healthcare. I don't want to do anything, even with something as important as my fucking life.
I know it sounds incredibly sexist, but there's a lot of women that think that exactly. That's why the Democrats have more female support than the Republicans do.
Wait, go back. What?
wimp.
Yeah, I'm gonna let you keep hanging up for real.
No, I'm just saying that women like that. What do you call it?
I can hear her reloading.
Do go on, Alan.
No. It's the security mm-hmm. thing. It's the not having to worry about. I'm not talking about
Alan. I am so sad that you're not going to be able to witness Trump presidency.
I'm not talking about particular women. I'm just saying if you
he's digging his hole.
No, look at the statistics. Look
Alan,
at the statistics.
Alan, let me save you. What you're describing is an analog to the British National Health Service.
Yes. But it's true. Look at the statistics. Look at who votes. Look for who. Look
and
at,
he goes back to it again, though.
Look at who votes for what.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
Yes. Okay.
There is a. Now, I'm not saying there aren't men that think the same thing, because there are.
And to be fair, I mean, I kind of got to like push back on that. Is where is I know that there's more. There's more women on the Democrat side than on the Republican side, and that's more of just the how the male female brains are set up. Is the female brain is more nurturing, more feeling. The male brain is more just hardline, insensitive, rational sort of idea. Hence the reason why like the engineering fields and a lot of the hard science fields definitely are more flush with men than women, you know, until you start getting into the more emotionally appealing ones, such as biology. Biology is about 50-50. But I would say, I don't know if necessarily the woman split is that hard line. It's not quite like, say, the African-American split or the, or the urban versus rural is just plain and simple of the true. Urban. Everything needs to be taken care of you. I live in suburbia, but I couldn't take care of myself. I couldn't grow crops in my backyard. If I hunted every squirrel in my neighborhood, I would go hungry inside of a month. It's just, there's not the support. I'm on public sewer. I couldn't have a septic tank. I don't have the room for it. You know, my garbage needs to be taken away. I can't have somebody, you know, I can't haul my own trash. It's just when you start living in a densely populated area, you need to have infrastructure to supply to everyone. But just the opposite, when you live in a sparsely populated area, you can't have that infrastructure, and you really need to be very, very self-reliant. So therefore, if you live in the country, you tend to be more towards the person that's not promising you all the sorts of shit, because you ain't going to get it.
Nope.
And yet on the other side, people promising you more shit, you're already pretty used to it.
Well, I wonder if it's a lot of the women, the young women have young, young husbands or young partners themselves, and they probably only have one healthcare policy, and you know, the women could be getting worried, well, particularly when they see the pussification of men. That the men would decide to, quit the job to do some existential, nonsense, and they feel that they, you know, whilst they have healthcare, they need a safety net in case the man in their life turns out to be some simpering little idiot.
It certainly could be a very real fear.
Yes.
All right. Well, I think we beat that one to death. I need to touch on this one last story before we go.
What's that?
On the Budweiser has unveiled, or at least has referenced, what their next big Super Bowl ad campaign is going to be. And they've stated, actually, let me pull up the actual.
This bowl you mentioned, is it made by Wedgwood?
What bowl? Super Bowl?
It's a Super Bowl.
Is that
this year?
Is that soon?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know if it's sometime. Isn't it in February? Wasn't it February last year? I don't know. I think
I don't know. What time is sports ball?
I don't know.
It's on Sunday. I know it's on Sunday.
Is it?
I don't know which Sunday.
You know, I was buying stuff in the store last weekend, and somebody, you know, I had Cokes and stuff, and somebody goes, "Oh, are you stocking up for the game?" And I just looked at him with a blank look on my face, and they were like, "Oh,
what game is it? Is it the World Series?"
I always say, "Why? Who's playing?" and then throw a big smile, and they automatically know, "Oh, you're not one of us."
Yeah, but you're right. The Budweiser thing is, I think it's a reaction to.
Let me read the headline. Anheuser-Busch will get rid of the slapstick antics and celebrity endorsements that have long been the hallmarks of its Super Bowl commercials in favor of back-to-basics approach of some of its best-known beer brands. Whether or not that's successful, a lot of people are saying that people have suddenly discovered that there is beer that doesn't taste like having sex in a canoe, make reference to Andy's last appearance. But what's really, really interesting that when I heard this headline that they were dumping their celebrity endorsements was the actual news headline talked about the it was Seth Rogen and
Amy Schumer.
Amy Schumer were doing the oh shit, it says in this Miguel Ferrer just died. Huh. I liked him.
Who?
He was a RoboCop.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah. But the they had this big the two biggest celebrity
cat
names.
Food time.
How often their bullshit, you know, this bullshit beer, how awesome this bullshit beer was, and it fell completely flat. And I got thinking about we are hearing all this noise about pushing back against Trump and, oh my God, no one's going to perform at Trump's inauguration. Trump's inauguration is going to be a complete belly flop, which is absolutely not going to be true. But there's all this time. I mean, you've got, you know, Meryl Streep being the big fucking hero and, talking about how just we're going to stand up and fight the power. And all that. And it's just so it just says to me that people are starting to realize that, yeah, when you say that to the majority of people, oh, no, you're the reason why you voted for Hillary Clinton is because you're a racist. Oh, is that so? Thank you for knowing me better than I know me. And just say, you know, fuck middle America, fuck flyover country, fuck the country bumpkins, fuck the South. You hear all of this stuff coming from the Hollywood, New York epicenters of political culture. And it's come to a point where I don't think there's going to be any sort of downtick in film. I think blockbusters are still going to blockbust. I think good movies are still going to do very, very, very well because we love our movies. But I think Americans are coming to, because for the longest time we just had this hero worship to celebrities of the, oh, if you can sing a song really well, or you can make believe on a screen really well, or you can write a book that's a page turner, then everything else of your life must be just as spectacular. But yet when you realize, like, oh yeah, No. Matt Damon played, you know, Will Hunting, this really, really smart savant that's working as a janitor in Harvard. You know, he did such a good job at that. He must be really, really smart. And then you hear an interview with Matt Damon and you realize.
Or you read his Twitter.
Yeah.
I think Twitter has done more to dismantle celebrity than anything else.
That's true. Or for the Star Trek nerds out there, Will Wheaton.
Shut up, Wesley.
He played the boy. He played the boy genius. He was this kid on the deck of the Enterprise. They were all older men with beards on there, and there's this little baby face in there because he's so smart. He's such a child prodigy. But yet, Will Wheaton is a fucking moron.
Yeah, but everybody hated Wesley, even when the show was on its first run. Everybody hated Wesley.
True.
Shut up, Wesley.
Yeah.
I think we've gone well over time, yes, by the way. Have.
We've gone way over
time. But I just like the fact that it's always been on the political side, especially on us little, counterculture, new media side of it, of the talking about the dancing monkeys.
We can actually, that'd be a good topic for our next show, when we can talk about my theory that I mentioned today to Brita, that the celebrity thing and this supposed huge divide in the country, we're supposed to be, we're so divisive now. I think we're not. And I think it's the same thing as how everybody thinks that even though the actual violent crime rate's dropping like a rock, everybody thinks it's worse than ever. And because that's all you hear about on the news. I don't think the country's as divided as the media would have us believe it is, just like the country is not as violent as the media would have us believe it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, if America was really, really, genuinely, horrendously racist, why are so many people, so many immigrants flocking to arrive?
Because we have welfare.
A lot of countries have welfare. Ask Hayden about that.
Well, and they're flocking to those countries too.
Yeah. To be fair, Hayden, I will turn around on your speculation. Is yes, you're absolutely correct. I mean, we have I forget his name. I don't need to mention him. The fucking Klansman that shot up the church in South Carolina.
Oh, that guy. Yeah.
Now sentenced to death. Good. Hopefully he won't put up much of a fight, because unfortunately that's how our justice system works. Is when you sentence someone to death, if they put up a fight, they get to die of old age. They get life in prison. And if they don't put up a fight and actually go willingly to the gallows, we do actually end up executing them.
Yeah.
That's fucking bullshit. It's fucking bullshit. Well, actually, no, Tim McVeigh got nuked pretty quick though.
Yeah.
Because he didn't put up a fight.
He didn't really appeal that much.
He waived all his appeals and he just, you got me. Yep. Send me off and bury me in Arlington Cemetery, of which they fixed that.
I gotta go, guys.
All right.
Okay.
Good night.
I'll finish good my night. Statement, but he okay. tried. He tried.
Bye,
to,
Hayden.
Bye. Bye, Brita.
Good night, Brita. He tried to, He tried to start a white revolution. He wanted to find other racists like him to kill more black people.
Yeah, except there aren't any.
And he couldn't find anybody.
Yeah.
He had to act alone. But so that's absolutely true. That shit just doesn't exist. That everything that they're saying about Trump is complete fucking bullshit. Like even down to the statement of, the first black president, was seceded by a presidential candidate that was endorsed by the Ku Klux Klan. No, he wasn't, because there is no Klan. Yes, there was some fucking booger eater in his basement that said he speaks for the Klan and he's the grand exalted Cyclops and that he endorses Donald Trump for president, but who gives a shit? But at the same time, we've got Black Lives Matter and La Raza and all of these super insanely racist organizations, and they get a complete and utter pass. I mean, not only by the media, but just by society in general, is no one's making comparisons to like Black Lives Matter to the Klan. And I think those comparisons are extremely well heated, because they are, a very, very loosely organized group, a kind of essentially a secret society. And at the same time, they are there to do violence on behalf of of others that are only loosely affiliated with them.
Yep.
All right. I've gone long enough.
Yeah.
It's time to say goodnight to the internet.
Yeah, we're done. Thanks for helping us out tonight, Aiden.
You're most welcome.
You sounded marvelous once you got your mic fixed. I don't know what you did, but it's a huge difference. It sounds so much better.
Once again, I'm very humbled. I'm very humbled to be invited. Thank you.
We need to have you on more often so that you don't feel that way anymore.
Yeah, yeah. We'll have you on until you're not humbled anymore. You're going, oh, crap, those guys again? Ah, damn it. No. Yeah, well, we'll be back next week. The first episode of the Trump presidency.
I think we'll have fun to talk about that.
That'll be weird.
We're going to have something to talk about.
Oh yeah.
I don't know what it's going to be, but it's going to be,
yeah, it'll be interesting. It'll be fun. Everybody have a good weekend and we'll be back.
All right.
Absolutely. All right.
Good night, internet.
Good night.